How's everybody enjoying can Beverly Hilton?
It's big. Can you say your names just for vote?
Yeah,
ID?
John Daly.
And Jonathan Goldstein.
Great. So two Johns.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's unfortunate. Mine's with the H, though, so that's what sets us apart.
Actually, I first spoke to you guys when this was just announced. I think we're at Burt Wonderstone.
Oh, yeah.
We don't talk about it.
I don't know what movie you're talking about.
Burt Wonderstone. Yeah.
There you go.
And I was just curious, like, now that this is in the rear view as much as it can be, you know, how did the experience of putting it together match your expectations? I mean, how was it different?
Well, when we first signed on to write it, we didn't know that we would be also directing it. So we were approaching it at first like it was any other writing job. But we've always wanted to direct. And so I think that you can see that in written material.
That old cliche of what I really want to do is direct.
Right. But that was the case with us. And so when we got the opportunity, I mean, the biggest difference between that and writing was just the level of preparation that goes into actually directing a movie. It's mind-boggling how many decisions you have to make.
And how immersive it is. I mean, writing, you kind of make your own hours, and when you're filming a movie, it's basically before the sun comes up, you're in a car going somewhere, and then you spend the whole day running around, racing to get everything you need, and then the sun goes down, you go home, and you fall asleep.
Yeah, I felt bad for Jonathan's wife and my girlfriend, because all they lived in was just us talking about vacation nonstop.
It becomes an obsession, you know. It's like it's your whole world for the 3 months you're shooting, and then it slowly tapers off. You get your life back in post-production. But that said, it was incredibly gratifying, because having had a couple movies made and turning them over to other people to make, it's difficult. Not to say we're the only ones who can execute our vision, but everyone's going to do it a little differently. And so to be able to translate it directly to the screen was so great.
Yeah, that creative freedom was really gratifying and empowering.
Can you talk about the tone? Obviously, this is a more raunchy, darker version of the original films. Where did you draw the line? Did you have much worse scenes that you edited out, or
worse? By worse, what do you mean?
I know it's subjective. But tell me about the tone.
We knew when we started prepping this to direct that we were making an R-rated movie, and that there are certain expectations that come with something like that. What we tried to adhere to was, at the very least, preserving the characters' voices. And as long as our characters weren't betraying what we had already established with them, you can get away with a lot.
Mm-hmm. And we also try, I mean, we try where possible to undermine expectations, so it's not just the easy, the low-hanging fruit joke, hopefully. You know, some of those fruit are very low and you have to pluck them, but by and large,
and some of those fruit are actually turds. But
from the turd tree. The turd tree.
Yes.
But we always, part of what we think is funny is when the audience expects it to go one way and you take it the other way. We're all about sort of undermining, and sometimes that's can be frustrating. I think we got a lot of notes in early cuts of this of like, can't you just let them get through that roller coaster successfully? Can't you give them one thing? And they just felt like, no, you got to snatch it away.
That's the whole theme of the movie is a setup and then blue balls.
Nobody gets it away.
How much did you guys become sort of professors of vacationology by looking at the other movies to prep for this and figure out?
It was a balance. We didn't want to be too slaves to the originals.
I've never seen any of them. Personally, because I wanted to go into it from a completely blank slate. No, I was a huge fan of the original, and knew that we had to pay our respects to it to a certain degree, but also tell our own story. And that was the challenge, because we didn't want it to be just a bunch of remember this scene and remember that scene. But we did have a couple of those moments for the diehard fans.
And the truth is, like, the sequels did their own undermining of the original. They cast different kids every time. I mean, how ridiculous is that? You would never do that now. I mean, Louis C.K. is the only one who cast different actors in the same role from episode to episode. But
you guys do that for any
sequels.
Though. Of
course. Those kids,
don't tell the kids.
They think they're in the sequel.
I thought I meant him.
him too. We're going to go back to Anthony Michael Hall. No.
That's off the record.
It was What was the question?
how high are you right now?
So it's the only way I go into this.
So just digging deep into the old movies and deciding what was going to influence what you were going to do.
Well, it's funny. There are so many things that you forget about the original movie, even if you've seen it dozens of times. I remember to sort of celebrate when I was about to go off to Atlanta to start prep. My girlfriend hosted this screening of the original Vacation, and there were parts of it that I completely forgot, where it totally takes a bunch of shifts, and there were moments in it that I completely, you know, either blocked out or forgot. Like there was a whole scene where Clark was trying to get Ellen to fillet him while the kids are in the back, that I think as a kid I didn't even understand. But then seeing it again,
and it's funny because, you know, your question about the tone, and that this is so much raunchier and darker, I don't know that I totally agree. I think the original had a real darkness to it. That's kind of what the Lampoon thing was doing, just like Animal House. It was this very dark form of comedy that we hadn't really seen in mainstream comedy.
I mean, killing the dog was enough, but then you have the cop talking about what probably happened when that dog...
They dragged a dog
like
behind
he ran,
car.
He probably ran the first couple miles. Yeah.
We kill a cow.
But
you didn't. They didn't kill Christy Brinkley in the first one, so
that's true.
That was a shocker.
We don't know that girl died.
She could have survived. That's why we cut away, so you don't know. But Charlie Day survives, as we see in the photos at the end of the movie. But no, look, there's darkness in both. But I think people have a somewhat rosier memory of the first movie than is actually the case.
And how crucial was Ed Helms to the casting of this?
I mean, we
could have been anybody. I know, he's nice.
We first tried our hands at starring in it ourselves, alternating.
Nobody was buying
with each scene.
He was always. We made a little book of casting ideas when we went in to pitch ourselves as directors. Ed was the center guy on the page for Rusty. He's just the first choice.
He has some of the mannerisms that Clark Griswold has. But also this innocence, I think, to him that Clark didn't have as much of. And he's also just the nicest guy in the world, and it shines through in
just
his
like
performances.
Just like Chevy.
So we definitely were able to take advantage. I'm just going to ignore that statement. We were able to take advantage of that.
So what
did
you say?
Chevy's a nice guy. That's what you can. That's all I said.
That's right.
Did you have any family vacation histories yourself to draw from for this?
I have been on frequent road trips through my childhood, cross country, and it's always fun in theory, and then halfway through the trip you're ready to kill each other.
Yeah, I mean, just being pent up with your family in a car for any extended amount of time as a kid especially becomes nightmarish.
It's funny to think that, you know, you spend so much of your day commuting to and from work that the one time that you have off of work, you do so much more commuting than you ever would when you're working.
We were talking to some of the foreign press this morning about the difference between like Americans' vacations and European vacations, for example. And like we get maybe 2 weeks, and Americans, by and large, they say they'd rather take money than take those days if they had that option, which is so weird. And so what vacation you take nowadays, there's so much pressure on it to be the best part of the year, this great time, and it is almost killing it before you ever set out.
Yeah, you're so desperate to have fun, it sometimes comes at the cost of having fun.
And that's, I think, one of the themes of this movie. You know?
Did you guys choose the Seal song?
We did, yeah.
But is there any particular...
I mean, it's a beautiful song, first of all. It's anthemic, arguably.
Seal is my uncle.
Did you see the resemblance? No, I mean, we wanted Ed to have, or Rusty to have, a song from the 90s that he was a big fan of.
We figure that's when he stopped paying attention to music when he had a kid. He was just like, that's the last thing he liked.
There was a minute there where it was Tracy Chapman's Fast Car.
Tracy doesn't like her music to be used.
Especially in a comedy.
But I think it turned out for the better because that's such a somber song. And
it wouldn't have worked as well, in that last scene when they're going to a roller coaster.
So, like, great. Okay, just going on to see, was that actually his picture in there, or did you guys Photoshop that in?
That was
That was his picture.
I mean, it's really him, but he wasn't. In, he wasn't in Paris with Ed and Christine.
Does he know that the song figures?
So oh yeah, yeah
I would assume. I mean, he was paid a lot of money.
Yeah, but sometimes they don't know.
I, maybe he's got a check.
It's,
in the
I mean, there we. It's placed three times in the movie. And so you, it really is a testament to the song. I mean, all kidding aside, it's so incredibly catchy.
And I've heard it 80,000 times. I still don't know what it's about.
Exactly.
it's the, it's the drug and not the pill. I mean,
which yeah, makes you want to listen to it even more to finally figure
it's
out.
It's very cryptic. It means different things to different people on that.
Speaking about photos, the intro photo montage, were those real
videos? Yeah, those are from
Awkward Family Photos.
Awkward Family Photos. Yeah. So Chris Bender, our producer, his brother Mike Bender, runs this site, Awkward Family Photos. And we knew we wanted to have a title sequence, but we knew that it had to be interesting and compelling.
The original
to justify.
Had those old postcard, vintage postcards, and we wanted to do sort of an updating of that title sequence.
And I think it was a fun way to sort of set the tone of the movie, too, where it really does follow that theme of averted expectations, and you don't know what you're seeing until it's revealed, basically.
Even the dude in the Speedo is real?
Dude in the Speedo.
Well, here's the thing.
Is real.
All right.
No, there. If you look it up, there is that photo.
Yeah. No, that photo exists due to certain legal things.
We had to make modifications. But
it's the all. They're all, gotcha. If not actually the photo, they're all, they happen.
They are 95%. The legitimate photos.
That one was the
one.
Because it's so absurd, right?
Right. You wouldn't.
But that photo exists. That's what's so crazy about it. That photo exists in the world.
And they sent it. Somebody sent it in.
Ed and Christina are both so funny. Did they do any improvising while on the set?
They start. So, they riffed off of each other, especially later into production, because they established such a great rapport. Ed is very much, you know, from that school of improv and
but the truth is that we didn't have a lot of time each day. We were so rushed to get everything we needed that we at most we would try a few different versions. We would throw some alternate lines out, or they would try a different riff, but often it was racing.
It was a fast-paced production schedule, for sure. But I feel like, you know, everything that we wanted we got, and there were obviously more riff heavy scenes than others, like the Four Corners sequence. We knew going into it that they were all going to be playing off
we
of
gave
each
most
other.
Of those insults were scripted, but then once they started shoving guns in their mouths and stuff, that was just we just stood back.
And also we didn't know how the scene was going to end. We had a sort of placeholder blow for it, but we didn't know that it was going to end up with them all on the ground.
Once somebody said get down, we were like, all right,
oh,
let's
why
go
don't
with
they
that.
All go? Why don't they all go down and then just stay with them in silence for a minute?
And Keegan, I'm sorry,
Michael Peña's
great. I just saw him in Ant-Man
right.
yesterday, cool. And he was the shining star of that movie. And I'm even more glad that we got him.
Yeah. That was the good thing about Atlanta, is that people were there for other movies. We could snatch him.
Ron
for a
Livingston
day or two
was in Atlanta as well.
Yeah. You got Chris Hemsworth as sort of the anti-Cousin Eddie.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, exactly. The handsome version.
Yeah.
Like letting him cut loose with some comedy like that.
I mean, it was scary at first because we didn't know what we were getting. He hadn't really done anything like this. And his people called and said, Chris wants to do comedy. Are you interested? And he thought, well, it's risky, but let's try it. And he showed up and he took it so seriously, like a dramatic role. He got a dialogue coach and all this, a dialect coach, and he just was so real in the part.
He couldn't have been funnier. He treated it like he probably treats any other role, and took it very seriously. So he wasn't trying to be funny. He wasn't trying to be goofy, which often falls flat, especially with dramatic actors. He embodied the role, and I think that's what made it work so much, to the point that where we were getting calls from other directors asking us how funny he actually was, because they liked the trailer so much they wanted to cast him in movies.
I think his role in Ghostbusters, because Paul Feig called and said, how was he, right? So you're welcome, Chris Hemsworth.
Sorry.
And Paul.
Do you guys have, like, providing there's another film, where you want to take them next?
You know, we've been toying with locations. I don't know if we want to say yet, in case it is subject to change.
Or the movie bombs.
Yeah, that too. You know? But we're excited to revisit the Griswolds if we have the opportunity, for sure.
So you do have some more.
We have an idea in mind, but I don't know if it's worth saying at this point.
Initial conversation with the studio.
Gotcha. Yeah. Did you guys find it a unique challenge? Not just tackling kind of your first movie like this, but it's a road trip movie.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And those provide its own unique challenge.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Well, they're all very episodic.
Right.
And they're in the car a ton. It's like 28 pages of car. And so you're like, how do you keep that from getting tedious?
It's and one way is to make the car really stupid.
Mm-hmm. you build jokes into the car. So that, yeah.
But also, I mean, the fun of road trip movies, especially when you're shooting a lot of green screen driving stuff, which we did, is it allows the actors a lot of time to be stuck in this car together between setups, just talking to each other and becoming more of an actual family, which we found was one of the greatest benefits of all those car scenes, is that by the end of the movie, they had their own inside jokes. They were making fun of us in ways that we didn't even understand, which was great. But no, they became a family by the end of it.
Part of what we tried to do to counter the episodic nature of it was to make sure that each character had sort of a emotional through line that you're following in the audience, so you're like, you know, tracking this thing that's more than just, okay, we're trying to get to Wally.
Yeah, we didn't want to mimic the original where the wife character is just sort of supporting and rolls her eyes at the dad's hijinks. We wanted to give her a very specific voice and a history that, you know, rears its ugly head.
I don't know if you guys are able to talk about this at all, but just yesterday there was a lot of news that you may be working on a movie starring a superhero with Marvel and Sony, and I don't know if you're at any place where you're able to talk about
it. We can't.
We're not. We don't even know what you're talking about. Yeah. I wish we knew what you were talking about.
The Green Lantern?
Yeah.
No, but, so what does the swastika button do?
We don't know. We don't want to know.
No one will ever know.
Okay, good, good. No.
That car was a character of its own.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
That was always the intention.
Yeah, so who came up? I didn't know if it was coming or going.
Yeah.
Was that created?
The idea of it being basically symmetrical came in the middle of the design process, because we liked the idea of it being cute and button-nosed. But only later did we realize that it was starting to look very symmetrical in front and back.
Let's put
side view mirrors in the rear.
And headlights on the rear. And, you know, it's ridiculous. Exactly. We wanted it to be a character in the movie, kind of like the truckster was in the original film. And so we devised, you know, Albania is probably the country Americans know the least about. And so we thought we can get away with anything.
The last time that country was featured was in Wag the Dog, I think.
When you saw the finished car, what was their reaction?
We were thrilled.
We were laughing.
They rolled it off the truck, and we were just like, holy shit, this thing is so stupid looking.
It was kind of the same reaction we had when we first went into the bathroom, the world's worst bathroom.
Well, that
where
whole,
we just
that
looked
set.
At it and just started laughing at how
so
stupid
disgusting.
It all was.
Yeah, that was a set... That whole thing was built on a stage, that motel, and that courtyard and stuff, and we got there in the morning, we're like, we said run down, we didn't say, like, disgusting.
Yeah, we had to bring it up just a little bit, because it's very much out of the movie Seven.
Yeah. like you expect Jigsaw to come in, you know.
Was the story always going to be told from Rusty's point of view?
Yeah, pretty much, in the way that it was sort of Clark's story in the original films. But, you know, with everybody else having their own sort of, you know, story to track along.
Would you ever be open to doing one with Audrey?
I mean, we're open to anything, really. At this point, now that we're finished with the movie, we can explore any angle.
Right.
Leslie is
so amazing, and you know, while her part was somewhat small in this movie, we were so grateful to have gotten the chance to work with her, and she's so versatile and hilarious in everything that she does.
If there is a sequel, I mean, we would certainly want to have her and Hemsworth be a part of it.
Can you talk about
working on scenes for Chevy and Beverly and then seeing them put it together for you, mm-hmm. tell me that experience.
It was amazing. It was the coolest thing in the world because they really do feel like husband and wife. They make fun of each other incessantly. He gives her a hard time. She does the same.
And then they go outside and smoke.
But no, it was one of the cooler, more surreal moments in our directing career was directing Chevy and Beverly in a vacation movie.
Did he improv at all?
Not really. There were two beats where one thing he suggested when you first see him is doing that thing of like, Ellen, oh, there you are, which is from the original. He suggested that, so he did that. And then the guitar thing where he's fiddling with the guitar, we just sort of found that on the day. He did it the first time and he clunked it, and then we said, like, you want to just make a meal out of that? And so he did that whole bit and felt very Chevy. And so.
But there were deliveries that we weren't expecting from him, like when... with the Jimi Hendrix riff, and he says no in sort of a yes response. We didn't imagine it said that way, and it elevated the humor so much more for us.
Were you surprised to find out there was a replica of the car, the original car from the movie?
Go ahead. Oh, well, we were grateful too, because we couldn't, for some reason, Warner's couldn't find
who
the...
Well, as it turned out, in Georgia, not too far from Atlanta, was this family whose name was the Griswolds. And they had taken so much flack over the years for their name that they decided, let's build a replica car.
So the base car that they built off of was the same as in the original
LTD,
movie.
And so that's when they drove it up and they were excited, and that's what we used in the
movie. And it was an exact replica, too. I mean, it looked exactly like the original, minus the honky lips. But we were so lucky in that sense because they were in Georgia when we were shooting.
Awesome. Thank you,
guys.
Yeah, appreciate it.